Global consumerism is a $40 trillion a year phenomenon, which makes it the largest, most predictable investment opportunity on the planet. Who are the prime beneficiaries of global consumption trends? Mega brands. Welcome to the Mega Brands podcast series. I'm your host, Eric Clark. In this podcast, we explore mega trends through the lens of a global investor with the ultimate goal of identifying the most relevant, most innovative brands that are best positioned to become what I call mega brands. These are the brands that are customer obsessed, have a corporate culture of innovation and self-disruption, create products and services that are in high demand, that exhibit strong brand love from customers, are serving a global opportunity, and appeal to multiple demographic groups. What's the reward for a company that meets these criteria? More revenue, more cash flow, higher market share, and the potential to reach the $1 trillion club. Please enjoy our next episode of Mega Brands.
Eric Clark is the portfolio manager for the Rational Dynamic Brands Fund in conjunction with his partners at Acuvest Global Advisors. All opinions expressed by Eric and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Acuvest Global Advisors or Rational Funds. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. Clients of the Brands Fund or Acuvest may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.
Hey, everybody. This is Eric Clark, Global Brands Portfolio Manager. It's Friday, July 14th, about 9 a.m. on the Pacific side of the country. And we're going to do something different, very different today. I'm going to interview somebody that understands and follows the options market. And the reason that I'm doing this is because I've mentioned a number of times, if you follow me on Twitter, you've heard it as well. The reality is the public markets have always been a casino, but they're becoming more a casino than ever before. And so we can hem and haw about it and just let volatility take us by surprise, or we can try to do something about it and gain an edge and at least follow what's happening in the options markets, because there is a lot of crazy stuff that happens in these markets and you can make a lot of money from it. You can lose a lot of money from it. I remember going through when I first got in the industry, 97% of all litigation and financial services happens from options trading because people lose money quickly in the market and then they blame somebody else. So options can be very rewarding. They can be very risky, but the reality is they're a very large part of the daily trading volume. And with all of the new products, these one day till expiration options, which is now about 50% of total S&P volumes. So the casino is fully open like never before. And there is a way to follow the big institutional trades. So you can maybe cherry pick some of those, either A, make some money, speculate, or maybe even protect your own portfolio or capital when you see some of these options flows happening. So it is a very expensive thing to do. It is very time consuming. And so some people have the systems in place and great, you can do that. Some people, most people, I would say don't. And so the choice is to ignore it or to find a subscription or a service that helps you kind of gather all that information and cull it down into a more easily consumable format. And that's what I want to do today and talk to somebody that I met through Twitter who has, I've been watching him for over a year now, post and trade the options markets with very big success on the upside and on the downside. This isn't just a, long only, it only works when the market's going up. He is very technical in nature, very experienced. And if the markets are trending down, he's happy to go on the downtown train and make money on the short side, on the put side. So really fun conversation to have. We're going to talk about the options markets, how he uses the systems that he's built to decipher some interesting trades that might be happening or occurring so he can kind of front run some of the big money and some of the trades So very excited. The alias of this gentleman is James Boultard, and I'll let him tell you why it is kind of an alias and a play on Fed Governor James Bullard. But without any further ado, let's talk about the options markets and how to make money and protect your portfolio by watching and trading and checking the flows from big, smart investors. Hey, James, how are you?
Good, Eric. What's going on, man?
Happy Friday.
Every day's Friday for me, so I'm ready to go.
Well, every day's 5 o'clock for me. You know, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. It's the Irishman and Englishman in me, I guess. Maybe the Native Indian, I guess, too. First, we have to get to the Boultard thing because people need to understand, you know, on Twitter, you're at James Boultard 7. You know, we met on Twitter. And just, you know, I love your posts and a lot of your, yeah, there are a few edgy comments that we both have that some people may not love sometimes, but that's okay. I'd much rather be real and truthful and honest, and people can decide if they dig that or not. So what's the story behind the name?
You know, James Bullard, actually, he stepped down yesterday. I'm pretty sure you saw
that.
He's going to be like a chairman at like a business school or something.
Good riddance.
Yeah, he was my favorite Fed member because he was always the guy that they, you know, sent into crash markets. You know, every time they sent him in or Kashkari, you knew that you were about to get this like bear case on why stocks needed to go lower. So I always loved him. I'm gonna miss him because I don't know who's gonna replace that. You know, every other one is just, you know, pumping stocks every day. You know, it's nice to have a little contrast.
See, now you're tied to him, though. You've built a brand around it.
I never set out to build a brand. I just got on Twitter. And then all of a sudden, you know, 2 years later, you have, I don't know, 12,000 followers, whatever. That wasn't ever my intention.
Well, listen, when you provide good, timely information, and for particularly for financial markets, you will get a lot of followers, and which might tell you that I must not be providing good financial information because I don't have near the followers, but I can't put some more specific stock stuff as I would like because I run a fund. So let's talk about your specialty here because, you know, I'm a long only equity guy. I'm focused on global consumer spending and identifying brand relevancy, but I'm a stock guy. And so right. The options markets have always been a little bit of a mystery to me, but the reality is the options markets have become very, very large, very important, and very interesting from a money-making and protecting your portfolio perspective. Witness the growth of the SIBO, the index. I'm frankly surprised they haven't been acquired already. So you know, you can ignore the options markets, but there's a lot of great information that tells you what the big institutional flows might be and institutions might be thinking and how they're expressing their views through the options markets. And so whether you're a trader or you're an investor, there's some great information to be gotten from the options markets, but there's a lot of data. A lot of that is expensive. We talked about, you know, Bloomberg's fee on a monthly basis. There's a lot of data, raw data that you have to kind of cull and into some, you know, something that gets down to actionable advice. And so great if you have all the resources and the people to do that, but the average, you know, high net worth investor doesn't have that information, which makes your service pretty intriguing. And I, you know, there's a ton of option services out there. You know, the Nigerians on CNBC got famous, I think, for talking about their options flows. But I've really enjoyed following you and you post a lot of these things. You trade your own personal account. So it's not like you're just doing a paper portfolio. You're actually trading a lot of these flows for personal gains and use. And so talk to me about how you got started with this and why it was important. And then we can kind of get into what you're seeing these days.
Well, I mean, the main thing is most investors sit around and they want to follow what funds are doing, right? And they're going to do it following 13Fs or, you know, they're just sitting around waiting months to see what a fund bought. with the options market, it's live. When you're seeing these trades, like I just noted a trade like a few minutes ago, you'll see in today's recap, somebody just laid out $42 million on some Amazon calls out in November. 14,000 of them just bought a few minutes ago. And that's not something you're going to see 3 months from now, because 3 months from now, Amazon might be materially higher, right? Like, we want to know what funds are doing today. We don't want to know what they're doing 3 months from now, because they might have sold out of that position by the time that 13F came, right? Like, you have all these people sitting around waiting for all these, you know, superstar managers to drop their 13Fs. I mean, we don't even know if they're in those positions at that point in time. And so it's better to follow it in real time. But like you said, it's cost prohibitive. I mean, either you've got a terminal, you're paying thousands a month for that, or you can even access the data directly from the CBOE, but that's still $350 a month. And what you're getting with that data is you're just getting a lot of raw data, like you said, like what the Nigerians offer. All these option services, they're literally just feeding data from the CBOE, but that doesn't do any good because there's millions of trades. You know, I try to break down, say, 100, 120 of the oddest trades in a session, right? Because to me, I have my own parameters that I'm looking through, and I'm looking for historical oddities within a name, right? Like, if a name's trading on average, let's say, like 500 calls a day, and all of a sudden, you've got 9,000 calls traded today. Well, what's going on there? Why is that happening? And that's my focus, because I model trends so we can see what names have strength and weakness, right? Like, one trade isn't going to say much a lot of the time, but you gotta build trends over time. And that way we can see where the money's flowing, which is, you know, the single most important thing in markets, right? Like, you don't want to be in a name that's weak.
Now you tell me. Well, let's talk about the Amazon thing. I mean, you know, Amazon was down 50% last year, and I was like, I don't care what's happening in the world. When Amazon or a company like Amazon's down 50%, you need to close your eyes and buy it, particularly if you have a little time on your hands. But you, when did you really start seeing a lot of the options volume? Because it seems like it's been accelerating of late, obviously, because, you know, people chase price momentum, and Apple and Amazon has had some good price momentum. But if you can kind of walk me through what you've been seeing in Amazon, because that's a popular name and a great business, that I think that's a good place to start.
So, I mean, in my database, it's definitely the most bullish name over the last 3 month period, right? It's just in constant flows. And here's the thing that people don't understand. When you're looking at the fundamentals of a company and the financials, the funds that are in those names, they got in way before you. They got in months back, right? And so what you're seeing in the options flow is you're seeing funds lining up into Amazon before this free cash flow explosion that you're going to see over the next, let's say, 36 months, right? Amazon hasn't had free cash flow in 2 years. And I think right here, as they turn around, they're probably going to do $100 billion in free cash flow 36 months from now, right? And so the stock has historically tracked free cash flow. It hasn't tracked earnings. Earnings are kind of irrelevant. And Bezos said that himself. He said free cash flow is, you know, the true measure of a company. But what you're seeing is the funds are moving into it before that move. And you see this in all kinds of names. Like, you go back to April, somebody came in and bought like 40,000 max strike calls on Facebook, Meta. And I think he cashed that trade in yesterday for like a $70 million gain. And he rolled them into 600 calls for December 2025. So if you look at the open interest on the December 2025 Meta 600 calls, there's 40,000 of them right now. And that player is looking for a very big move up over the next, you know, 2 years.
Wow. Well, so let's take a step back. How do you kind of do your system? Because I'm a recent subscriber, because I've realized I don't have the time or the expertise to analyze all of that data. So for people that want to get more interested in options and the, and kind of analyzing the flows and trying to figure out how to make money from those flows, or in some cases protect their capital if you start to see a lot of index put buying or something which might indicate institutions might be, you know, hedging up a little bit, you know, walk us through kind of what people can expect. And then I have some questions specifically on, you know, some of the daily stuff too.
Right. So, I mean, the only way I would put it is I don't waste time. All these other option services highlight everything. I don't want to do that. That's pointless. You don't need to know that there were, you know, $46,000 call lots bought on Amazon. There's no sense in that. So I just try to highlight simply the oddest trades in a session. That's it. And I try to get it out by 1 o'clock because a lot of people are day traders and I want them to have access with like a couple hours left in the day to be able to put on some trades, you know, in case they gap up the next day or whatever. And so I just send out, you know, a recap. There's a table full of all the data for the day. You know, what were the odd trades, how many contracts? And, you know, I built this little trend system where it just takes the aggregate of all the data in my database and it starts to show you what's bullish, what's bearish over like multiple time frames. And, you know, it can just guide you. Like for me, I'm a put seller. So when I know what name's seeing a lot of bullish direction, I know what to sell puts into. I know what's heating up. And that's why, you know, I've been writing this for like 13 months now and I returned, I think like 120% or whatever. I post all my trades and all my recaps every day. And I just believe in following strength. Like this isn't, you know, the market's a lot less complicated than people think. Where it gets complicated is people want to fight gravity with their thesis, right? Like all that stuff about earnings, that stuff matters to a degree, but what matters first is the positioning. Are people buying my stock? And you can see that in the chart and in the options flow. And so for me, those two are paramount to actual earnings. The earnings are going to come after you see it in the chart.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, just speaking from my side, remember, you know, longer term investors tend to be more buy and hold and they put money in every year. And, you know, they invest for multi-decade long until they get to retirement. And then they start to draw from that. It's a lot harder for particularly advisor driven clients to be making these massive shifts when trends break to create a bunch of gains, which is obviously a no-no. But at the end of the day, you know, you ask a client, do you want to create a bunch of cap gains? Because I'm a little nervous about the market. They're like, well, I mean, unless you think the market's going to crash, I really don't want to have to pay a bunch of taxes. And then when the market's down 30%, they'll say, I really wish we would have paid those cap gains. So you can't win in some regards. So, but this stuff is just super helpful around the core and helps people, you know, figure out some allocation shifts. But let's zero in on is there a kind of options flow that gets you most intrigued? You know, you and I talked offline, you're always going to see some flows in big cap names, but and in some cases you don't necessarily know what to make of some of that stuff if I'm correct in that assessment, right? Unless you see these repeat buying or selling in right, bigger size than open interest. But what really gets you excited? What are some of the highlights of things that you do start to write about that, you know, so people know if they do a subscription, you know, why do you, when you take this big group of data and cull it into a smaller group, what ends up making the cut?
You know, the ones that catch my eye the most are the ones where names don't really have a lot of option flow and then they buy short-term expiries, right? In yesterday's recap, I highlighted, it was SSYS. I don't even know what this company was. But 2 weeks ago, I think, 3 weeks ago, somebody came in, bought like 12,000 calls. And wouldn't you know, they expire next week. Yesterday, I don't know, it soared like 12% or something. And I think those calls went up like 500%. Right? And it's like, somebody always knows. And when I began writing this Substack, it was like June 8th last year. It was the Sierra Wireless trade that I wanted to explain to people that day. what I saw and what I thought was going to happen. And so that day somebody came in, I had the tweet somewhere in my feed on Twitter, and somebody sold 25,000 puts at 1750 and they turned around and bought a 25-30 call spread 25,000 times. And it was on June 8th, 2022. And you would look at the open interest, there was zero on Sierra Wireless. Like, this wasn't a stock anyone traded. And within like 45 days, it was bought out for $31 a share. And that trade was very, very profitable. And, you know, if the SEC really did its job, someone who put that on would definitely face some consequences, right? Because that wasn't some random stroke of luck. You know, that was somebody deep in the know. And look, they don't fear the SEC, right? Like, they don't even hide it. Here's a 75,000 contract trade, right? They didn't care. They knew nothing was going to happen. But the question being is, why stop at 25,000? You know what's coming, right? why not step it up? Why not? you know what's about to happen. Just go all in.
Just make the trade in the Caribbean, and then they can just come and find you if they ever look. But it doesn't seem like the SEC even looks. I don't. What's amazing to me is the SEC keeps approving, you know, the 3x levered ETFs that are mass weapons of destruction and a bunch of other garbage that people should never touch, and yet they don't follow some of these things, which are clear violations of securities laws.
Absolutely. I mean, you had one a month ago. I tweeted it out. There was this little miner in like Peru. It was, the symbol was BVN. It was like $7.05. And somebody came in and put on this huge risk reversal, which is where you sell puts to finance the calls. And they bought 100,000 calls at $8. 100,000. The stock had zero in the open interest, literally zero. And yesterday the stock hit $8, and these all expire next week. But had you just bought the stock, I think it was up like 15% in a month. I mean, just unbelievable. The game is, I don't want to say rigged, but there's a method to this madness, and it's not in reading balance sheets.
Right, right. Well, so the new development is this ODTE, this one day till expiration.
Right.
Theme. I read somewhere, I think it was on Cboe's site, 50% of S&P options are now one day till expiration. Like, I've, if you follow me on Twitter, you know, I mean, and I'm the guy who operates in public markets, but it's important you understand what you're investing in. It's a casino, a rabid right. casino, right? And so if 50% of options volume is one day to expiration, you know, is that something that your system will be tracking to, or do, you know, what are your views of those kinds of options in general? Cause I know that's what people are.
I don't really deal with index options. You know, I try to look for just oddities. That's all I'm looking for. Right. I'm trying to find that like little name that is seeing something that should be on someone's radar. But yeah, you're right. I mean, zero day to expiry has completely changed the market. I mean, we have expiration every day.
That's like literally, you can, in your home, you can be in Vegas doing roulette.
No, right? I mean, that's a fair assessment. That, I mean, that's what it is. I mean, that's exactly what it is.
But nobody gives you free drinks, and you can't look at pretty girls and or pretty boys if you're a girl or whatever. I guess politically correct. I don't know what, I don't even know how to address that these days. You're not allowed to say anything, or you have to say everything to cover all bases. But it just seems like the casino just keeps getting more volatile, making the option, making tracking the options flows more important.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look every day at what the top traded names are. It's the same ones every day. It's Tesla by a mile. Like Tesla's not even close to any of the rest. And then you've got your Nvidia and your AMD, Amazon's up in the top five, whatever. But with Tesla especially, it trades like 5x the volume of like a top five name daily. And that's because like every retail investor in America is piling into Tesla calls. Go talk to your Uber driver the next time you're in one. He probably has Tesla calls. And it just, I mean, it creates this gamma squeeze on a daily basis where you have a company, like Tesla's a fine company. I don't have any issue with it, but it just squeezes every day higher and higher and higher because the options flow is like so one-sided and it's just a stream of buying. It's one of the craziest things I've ever seen.
So I haven't looked back at some of your archives. Has your system uncovered any put buying in Tesla over the last, 13 months or so? Last year the stock got crushed. Did you see more put buying?
Absolutely. I had a tweet. You can see it on my feed back then. And I said, Tesla was going significantly lower. It was like 275 at the time. And it ended up going to like $100. You're going to see this stuff in the chart. That's what I try to tell people is the chart is just showing you the buying and selling, right? That's all a chart is. Like everyone wants to ignore the charts. Like there's some kind of like magical, voodoo type thing. Charts are simply buying and selling shown into a graph. And when a chart breaks, why would you want to hold on to that stock? One of my most followed tweets was last April. And I showed Amazon breaking through the 200 week. And I said, guys, Amazon's a great company, but this is going to be dead money for some time. And here we are 16 months later, Amazon is sitting right now, right on the underside of that 200 week. And we still haven't been able to get up. So it's technically been dead money for 16 months. It doesn't mean that Amazon's a bad company. It just means this is dead money until it's not. And my focus as a trader is, I don't want to be in dead money. I don't want to be in stocks that are dead. I want to be in what's being bought. And I think that is what separates me from most people. I'm not going to sit there and hold a weak stock waiting for my thesis to happen.
Yeah. I'm guessing if we're sitting right there at some, significant overhead resistance where things break down, there's the bulls and the bears are probably duking it out at this level. But given the robustness of the option activity, it's clear that people think a market leader, an economic leader, is going to get back to the winning ways that it's had since 1997 in the IPO. Largely betting against Apple, Amazon has been a pretty bad bet. So from a mean reversion perspective, the last 2 years of it being basically dead money and adding zero value to a portfolio is the anomaly. I would think. We'll see.
Right.
That's certainly the way I'm betting for it as well.
Sure.
So let's talk about some recent activity that you're seeing. I, as a brands guy, it was interesting to see Nike on your list yesterday. That doesn't tend to be a name that gets a lot of options flow. What do you think? The stock has been a laggard for a while because of the inventory situation. There's a lot of fundamental reasons why the stock's been a laggard, but it's interesting to start seeing some options flows because that's a bit of a, in my portfolio, a laggard turned, catch up play. And the options flow just may be confirming that if they're correct, obviously.
Look, to me, a name has to fit a certain criteria for a long position, right? Like if you're a short-term, like day trading it, you want to see it over the 8 EMA, right? The exponential moving average. When you're talking about like taking a longer term position, something like Nike, I'm just looking at it here. At this moment, on a weekly chart, it's still, well below the 8 week, right? For me, that's not a time to go long the thing, but when it curls up over that 8 week, right? It hasn't done that looking here in a few months. It hasn't done this since like early May. So it's been a laggard for, let's say, the last 3 months. I want to get in after. I want to get in once it's displaying some strength. So maybe those calls are somebody placing a bet that it's about to turn a corner, right? I don't remember the exact expiry of those, but I'd imagine they're probably looking for this thing to turn around. And why not? This was $130 stock not that long ago, right? It's not it's not that crazy for it to turn up. The thing that most people don't realize is the length of the weakness, right? When weakness happens and your stock breaks down, the reason it stays weak for so long is all those moving averages turn south, right? And so when you consider that like 90% of the market is traded by computers, those computers are selling every single time the stock turns back up against the moving average. So you're really fighting gravity. So it takes time for those moving averages to come down, flatten out, and then the stock to reclaim those levels. And that's when you want to get long.
Right. I don't have my charts open right now. Where's the 8 EMA on Nike, just out of curiosity?
So on the weekly right now, it's like just a hair above, like 110, right? But okay. It's rejected it pretty much constantly since early May, right? It's been well below it. And you know what? This might be the push to get through it. This may be the push where it finally does it in the next couple of weeks.
And I think that's where the strike was. I think they were in the 110s.
Right.
Okay. What else are you looking at right now that's a little intrigue? I mean, Friday is probably not a big day for options volume, but you know, maybe. So over the last week, anything interesting strike you?
Yeah, over the last, say 2 weeks, oil has really been catching a bid finally. Oil's been weak for the longest time. I think it's up like 10% in the last week. I mean, you're finally seeing these calls in Exxon and Chevron. You're finally seeing it wouldn't shock me if there was a rotation, right, after this huge move tech scene. Last year was a year where tech was down, oil was up. And so just from what I'm seeing here, obviously there's still nonstop with these NVIDIA and Meta and Amazon calls in big tech, but you're not really seeing it in Apple. You're not seeing it in Google. But it feels like there's starting to be a move towards these energy names is what I'm seeing. You know, I'm seeing these, Marathon, like these smaller oil names, these smaller energy names, things like, I mean, there's just so many of them, but you're seeing put sales and you're seeing call buys, Hess and CVE and all these little energy names. And so I do think we're probably going to see a little period of energy rotating into like leadership.
Yeah. And I'm starting to see, I do ratio charts and, when you compare value, the value index versus the growth index, there is a little bit of a curling up on an oversold basis for value over growth. So energy and industrials, financials certainly should participate if value starts to, have a little bit of a renaissance. I'm looking at some of the reports, and there's a, just for people that are going to subscribe to this, there's a trade count, which it looks like, a number, I'm guessing activity, and then there's a bull score. So what's the deal with the bull score?
So that's a system I designed. When I was still active and working, I built my own little system where I take the aggregate of all the data in my database, right? There's 20,000 trades in my database just this year, right? Just on like 2023. And the score is the net, right? So if you've got I've got to pull it up in front of me. I don't have one in front of me. But okay, like right now, if you're looking at, say, like the 1 week time frame, and I show these over like multiple time frames, right? So people can get a grip on various time frames. Like if you're looking at this week alone, you can see that something like MGM had 5 trades and they were all bullish, right? And MGM had a huge week. It was up 5% yesterday. And actually on Monday, I noted a huge risk reversal there. Somebody sold like 7,500 puts and bought 7,500 calls. Of course it exploded. But if you look over like a longer time frame, you'll see something like over the last 3 months, you'll see Amazon, for instance, has a bull score of like 56. And what that is out of the 74 trades, the net score is plus 56. So there were, a certain number of bearish trades, but the net score was 56 more positive trades.
Got it. Okay. Because I know
it works the same way on the bearish side too.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's difficult that, again, which is probably the reason that people would want to subscribe to some sort of service. Yeah, because you never know the motivation of somebody, number one, and you never know if something was bought or sold unless you know the options market and you know how to decipher if something is bought or sold. And the, it seems to me the persistency of, you know, repeat purchases, one-offs are interesting if they're like SSYS when it's just out of nowhere. But if you see some persistent activity in a name, at the very least, sounds like that's a good opportunity to go and look at some charts and just get a feel for what somebody might be seeing. And then there's always the potential that somebody knows something, obviously.
More often than not, it's somebody knows something. I mean, more often than not, having done this a very long time. And like I said, you see this all the time. I mean, literally that MGM trade Monday. I mean, MGM is not even the kind of stock that moves like that. I don't even know what news came out yesterday. I don't follow it, but it was up five. I think it was up 5.5% at one point midday yesterday, you know, and it's just fascinating to watch because it's just one giant game. You know, it's there's nothing, there's no way to describe what I see, you know, and it's still fascinating to me all these years later watching, you know, somebody grab something and then end of day, it just rockets higher.
Yeah. As a slower moving, longer term investor, you know, I'm looking at some of these flows and there's a couple of things that jump out at me from a bigger picture, and that's emerging markets. So you got EWZ in Brazil, the ETF. You got EEM, the emerging markets ETF. You got some China, you know, BABA, and I don't know if Pinduoduo or JD is or Tencent's been active, but clearly BABA is the go-to name for options players. But there's definitely been some interesting activity just on the EM side, particularly as the dollar's rolled down. So, you know, there are actions that are happening that seem to be macro related from somebody who might be a believer in one trend and deciphering what might benefit from that trend if they are correct. And that's what you're seeing in EM. But that's the first time I've seen a bunch of activity in emerging markets for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I've been noting those for weeks. I mean, if you look at the one-month trend, I mean, the EWZ and the EM, I mean, they've been doing this for weeks and weeks on end. And look what happened this week. The dollar completely collapsed, right? And so, like I said, they're always in front of this stuff. And so to me, the order of importance in markets is number one is the chart. The chart never lies in terms of buying or selling, right? That's just plain truth. Second is, do the option flows align with what you're seeing in the chart? And that's how you're going to know, is it a hedge? Is it not a hedge? Why is this trade being put on, right? And then lastly, the fundamentals come in, right? Because those are the last thing of importance to me, because the others trump them in terms of what's really going to move this thing short term. Long term, yeah, sure, fundamentals matter, but long term, everything goes up, right? Like that's not really something that takes much research, right? Companies grow their earnings, right? They buy back stock. It's pretty simple.
I mean, we only have a few minutes left, but I one last question, you know, for people who are doing options, what makes you decide to take off a trade? I mean, obviously, if you get a pop, that's fine. But, you know, what are you using? What would you, you know, kind of talk to people about? Well, if you're buying the 110 calls and you get some movement and it's past 110, you know, any, you know, how would you recommend people kind of trade these things if they do get in and know when to get out? Because buying seems to be, for me anyway, buying's easier than selling sometimes, the decision.
Well, I mean, I'm not really a call buyer myself. I'm a put seller. So for me, when I'm closing out puts, it's about when it's crossed the threshold of it's usually too much margin for too little return left, right? Like I'll close out my short puts when the total returns say below 20% based on the margin utilizing. So that's how I look at it. What I would tell investors that are buying calls is sell it whenever you're comfortable. I mean, there's always another trade. Everybody right. wants to squeeze every dollar out of every trade. Finding
there's
new
always a new one.
There's an unlimited amount of trades and you'll always find something else. You don't have to hold on to get every last penny out of it. Because I see that all the time. And I see that with my friends all the time. Like, I'm going to hold this thing till it hits this like certain number. And I just try to tell them, you know, there's other things out there. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I traded for a living for 7 years. And I just remember it took me probably a year to have that mentality, because I always felt like, you know, I got to maximize. And then I'm like, you know what? If you sell out and it goes up, who cares? There's going to be another trade tomorrow, and then another tomorrow, and another tomorrow. So that's exactly the beauty of the casino. It's always open.
Exactly. And so there's always a new sector of relative strength, and you don't have to fall in love with any of these things. That's the main thing I try to tell people, is just don't fall in love with this stuff. There's always another name.
Right. So last, just for fun, this is not investment advice, but right. If you just said, you know what, I was going to take three names, and I was going to, based on a lot of the stuff that you're seeing, I think I know at least one of those three, what that would be, but what stock or ETF that have you just seen persistent activity in that leads you to believe there's some interesting things, you know, not necessarily to Friday, but, you know, for somebody that's looking bigger picture, what three do you think are interesting to you based on what you've seen, you know, over the last month or so?
I think Uber is one that's just been nonstop for months. I think Uber is one that probably heads up over 50, 60 bucks. You know, their CEO bought a lot of stock. People forget, I think two years back at 45, and then he dumped into the 20s and he bought, you know, millions more at 25. But Uber's really turned a really big corner, and I think it's going significantly higher. I think Exxon is about to. Exxon's another one where it had a huge insider buy in the 80s for, like, I want to say $80, $85 million from someone maybe a year back. And it looks like it's turning a corner there in terms of the option flows and charts. And I mean, lastly, I mean, Amazon, I mean, this thing hasn't done anything in 2-3 years, and they're finally coming back to that point where they're going to start generating free cash flow. And like I said, it's the most bullish name in my database over, like, every time frame, and they just keep loading up into this thing. And I think it's going to have one of those quarters where it just gaps and goes and never comes back, kind of like Meta had, you know?
There's the aha quarter coming.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Well, listen, man, for people that want to follow and or subscribe, go to jamesbultard.substack.com. Is that correct?
Yeah, you're great, Eric. That's very nice of you.
Absolutely. And on Twitter, it's jamesbultard7. So, you know, at the very least, he's a great follow. He gives you great information. There's a lot of great commentary. And if you're not following these flows, you're missing something, everybody. So I would urge you to do that. So thanks a lot for your time, man.
No, thank you for having me.
And maybe we'll do another one down the road, and we'll kind of look back and see, you know, some of this stuff and see what else is happening. And who knows, maybe it'll be all bearish trading and recommendations, which is obviously just as valuable for people.
All right.
All right, man. Good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend.
See you too.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Mega Brands, everybody. I'm your host, Eric Clark. For more information on this podcast and to learn more about the brand relevancy scoring system we use, be sure to check out the website at globalbrandsmatter.com. While you're there, make sure to sign up for the market newsletter and check out my latest thoughts on our favorite portfolio brands in the Dynamic Brands section. If you have any questions or want to learn more about the Dynamic Brands approach, send me a message on the contact tab. Thanks again for listening, everybody. Have a great day.